Public Works Committee meeting for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024, at 6 p.m. We got Alderman Funkhauser, Alderman Merritt, Alderman Cornelius, and Alderman Sullivan, and myself, Alderman Cope, present, and city staff. Citizens' comments, no one online?
Nobody.
Okay. No citizen comments, minutes for corrections slash approval for February 20th, 2024. Okay, good? And we'll take them as approved. New business, item one, PW 2024-22-2024 Road to Better Roads Contract Award.
All right, so bids were received in late February for the base road program. So we received the typical bids that we do on the road program. There's three contractors that normally do this type of work. All very close in bidding and the results, very tight bids, which is good to see. Low bidder was Deconstruction, so we are recommending awarding to Deconstruction in the amount of $1,382,442.77, and be open to any questions that anybody may have.
Good. Okay. Chris? Good. Okay. That could go forward. I was thinking maybe we vote on, or we do the open for the three major ones, and then the engineering can go
sure.
on consent. Can we do it that way?
Yeah, absolutely.
Save me reading a bunch. Okay, so that would go on regular agenda.
You can just do what I do and have John read it for us.
Item two, PW 2024-23-2024 Road to Better Roads Construction Engineering Agreement, and that would go along with the first item.
It is, yeah. It's a construction engineering contract to EEI, $112,791 is included in the budget as proposed, and it currently is approved.
And yeah, that could probably go on consent then if everybody's okay with that one.
Cool.
Okay, item three, PW 2024-24 Asphalt Rejuvenation Contract Award.
All right, so this year we actually separated out the rejuvenating program from the Road to Better Roads program. So something that Eric and my staff noticed is that we're paying a higher amount per square yard per area by including it with a base package. So basically, somebody like Deconstruction or other contractors had a pretty high markup. So we went ahead and broke it out, and sure enough, costs came substantially lower. In well below our budgets and much more in line where we expected. So there was only one bidder on our work. There's only two bidders or two contractors in the area that do this type of work. But CAM has done our work in the community for several years, very respected contractor. So we are recommending award of the rejuvenating program to Corrective Asphalt Materials or CAM in the amount of $82,748.25. And again, this work is basically placed on items that were resurfaced last year. We do this to try to extend the life of the asphalt, and it's anywhere from 5 to 7 years is basically what's been indicated in various studies.
Okay, so that
No, so I had asked a question on this last month. It was standard.
Yes.
So this came after that, obviously, right?
Yes.
Okay. Just curious, what was the price difference if it was in the?
I think we saved 30% to 40%, something like
wow.
that. Yeah, it was fairly substantial.
Okay. That one probably should go on the regular agenda. Item four, PW 2024-25-2024 Water Main Replacement Contract A Contract Award.
All right, we took bids on Contract A on March 7th. So we had very good bids on this particular contract. A handful of bidders noted there. Again, toward the low end, very tight bidding, competitive bidding. and came in substantially below what our engineer's estimate happened to be. So we are recommending award to the low bidder, Kindly Excavating, who we've worked with in the past, very good contractor, in the amount of $2,312,286.15. And the work is planned to start midsummer and go through fall, so be kind of the latter half of the construction season.
Something just popped in my head as a question on other projects. Have we added into our contract that we have it, the ability for penalties for delays that are not outside of their control? So things like we've had Box Hill when that was delayed, or other projects that are delayed, do we have penalties?
Yeah, in every one of our capital projects, we have basically what's called a liquidated damages clause. So if it's beyond the contract completion date, the city could invoke liquidated damages to recover its costs.
Do you anticipate any problems with them like we had with PCE?
Could never say never with a contractor or a contract, but Conley has, at least when we've worked with them before, they've been very responsive, they've been very good and attentive.
Okay.
So we've had a good experience with them thus far.
I don't know if any of you guys, but I've been taking a lot of calls on with this upcoming water main stuff where we can have issues that we had over in Converse. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, we certainly try to head those things off.
I'm just glad I don't see those three letters.
Yeah, so a couple things, you know, we're trying to do to just help with communications or potentially help is, you know, working with Aaron and Eric and staff to put together, I'd say, an upgraded information on the city's website, provide more, you know, continuous updates throughout the process. You know, if, you know, some things aren't going well, we can introduce and implement like weekly on-site meetings, which we've started to do with PCE, you know, throughout the contract. Not every project requires that, but, you know, certainly those things are, you know, in the toolbox, if you will, to try to keep folks within the contract norms.
And this year as well, I know that their RE that's on-site over in the industrial park has been going to the businesses every day. So it's really helped, and they're really moving along.
All right. PW 2024-26, 2024 water main replacement contract A construction and engineering agreement. And that's the last one we'll go on the regular time.
Thank you. Yep. So again, EEI for the aforementioned contract. So we got $191,659 for an estimated value of this one. And funds are included in the current year and then the next year's budget.
Chris? Okay, and we said that one on the consent, and then if someone wants to pull it off, they can pull it off. But it goes with the first one, so. Fairly good agreement. All right, item six, PW 2024-27. Resolution authorizing the execution of certain contracts, certificate of authority for rock purchases.
Okay, this is a new one on me. I've been doing the salt purchases for 25 years, and in order to file our salt purchase, we now have to send this in. So it just basically states that you, the city council, give Bart and I authority to enter these type of contracts with the state, and that we have the approval to submit our bids. It's basically what it is. My thought is that they had somebody last year that wasn't authorized submit a bid, and when they went to award it, they're like, we don't want this.
So you'll still have to approve it.
Absolutely. You approve the resolution of expending the funds through the MFT portion of the budget. This is just allowing us to bid on it.
Is this an annual certificate?
I think it will be now, because it'll change every year. I think this will be something we'll end up doing every year when we, you know, before we do this resolution.
It's the first time
for this.
Right, but I'm just not seeing anything that holds a time to it or anything like that.
I just think it goes with this year's bid, the way it was
requested.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So I think as employees change, they'll ask for the same thing every year. And I don't know if we could resubmit this one once you guys have done it, or if it has to be every year. Because I still use some of their standards from the 80s that they've never changed, so.
If it ain't broke.
That's right.
Good. No questions.
Good. Where do you want to put this one at? Should it be in a regular? Or
it's pretty straightforward to me. I'd say that comes up to you guys.
Yeah. Consent thing. Item 7, PW 2024-2A, Road Resurfacing Intergovernmental Agreement with Bristol Township.
This is a pretty straightforward agreement, since no money is going to change hands. We were just looking to get our paving done over in the Conover subdivision from last year's project. Bristol Township is paving that. So we asked them to jump on their bid so we get better pricing, and they said, well, wait, we have some paving over on McHugh and Walnut. That's right by where you're doing it, Heartland. Should we just trade? So we're just going to trade paving. It's exact same specs, inch and a half off, inch and a half on, and no money changes hands. This just holds us harmless and holds us accountable to do the job correctly. And them.
And EEI will still be overseeing it?
Yeah, EEI will oversee the paving portion of it, yep.
Okay.
Who oversees the townships?
County engineer.
Okay, so county engineer will be overseeing the town overseeing.
Yep. Yeah. And John's good, the guy they have on site.
So the punch list of stuff that we have.
It's different.
Correct. It'll be addressed.
Yeah, okay. That'll be addressed probably before the paving.
Yes.
Okay. Because with the paving, there's several issues over there on Sunset with water spilling back and not draining towards the drainage ditches.
Spilling.
Meaning flat. Yeah.
Flat paving. Correct. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. We'll make sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Over on Sunset there, right north of between Leisure and Pleasure.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I know right where you're at.
Yes.
There, and I made John aware of that as well.
That row of four houses.
Yep.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Chris?
We're considering people, even though the estimated amounts on the plans are slightly different.
Bristol Township has agreed.
Okay. Can we just get on the regular agenda? It's kind of a new thing, right? We've never done this before.
Oh, we've had intergovernmental agreements. We're just not switching money this time.
There's no money.
Okay.
It's just an IGA.
All right.
It's been 91 long years.
Go to consent then.
Signature.
Everybody's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Chris can pull it off. Okay. Number 8, PW2024-2924 EEI hourly rates. All right, EEI has requested an hourly rate change, as they have most years, you know, in accordance with what they do internally with their employees. So this really impacts the city in three ways. One, we have our base contract, which is set at, I think, $240,000 for the entire year. And so every year I say, you know, theoretically, because the hourly rates are increasing, but the total expenditure is not, we get slightly less hours. There still has not been a case in the past several years where Brad has come to us and said, you know, your normal work is exceeding this value, you need to increase the hours or the total spend yet. So they're still completing our base level engineering services for the same price they agreed to 13 years ago, 12 years ago, somewhere in that range. And so that hasn't detrimented the city yet. These hourly rates, though, do get incorporated into supplemental agreements, like all the construction engineering agreements that we just approved. So, especially the ones that are variable, you know, estimates, you know, those would be at the hourly rates, you know, in accordance with the schedule. And then also developer work. So, when a new subdivision comes online, basically the developer, you know, pays different fees to us and then we produce work, and or they pay the EEI invoices directly after they do the inspections, and so this would allow EEI basically to bill out to developers at that hourly rate too as well. So the ask is for about 3.8, 3.9% in total. I did include the
comparison to the 2019 to 2024 approved rates, just so you can see the total growth in those overall. Chris sent me an email earlier today asking if we had a breakout of hours spent for each one of those classifications. Checking with Rob and Christy, Rob said that he didn't have anything. Christy may, I don't know if you guys track that, like for individual clients. That's a question that you'll have to answer one way or another here in the near future, but we're still looking into it. So.
Okay.
And that's it, yeah. So if you approve it, then it'll go into effect for 2024.
3.8% kind of in line of what we've been averaging for rate increases for everybody?
For salaries last year, we were in the 3.5 to 4.5 range, depending on the person. I mean, contractors are different. Like with Kathy, I mean, like her rates and some of her associates' rates, you know, vary wildly from year to year. Some years they don't ask for increases, and then some years it's 10%. You know, it just depends on the individual contractor. So EEI's history of rate increase requests have generally been inflationary in nature. There hasn't been anything that's been like, you know, we're asking for this because of whatever reason, and it's above kind of what is a normal wage increase. So the one year that it was 7% kind of across the board was the, I think it was 2021 when we had skipped a year in 2020. So they actually... Right. You know, skip a raise for that year. So.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to take a look at some of the numbers with the, you know, like the T5, it's 5.1%. I'd like to see kind of how many of those hours are spent in that category, as, you know, some of these are only 2.9% increases. I want to do a little more of a dive
as
to what we're doing, because 3.8 is the average. If, you know, say you've got 40% of your time in that category, that could be a much bigger pull on the numbers as a whole. So that's why I want to take a dive into that just a little bit.
So what I was thinking on this one too is actually was put on a regular agenda, and then by then you can...
Well, hopefully we have that. If not, we can, you know, discuss it, see where it's at.
Okay. So yeah, it'll be on the regular agenda if everybody's okay with that. Sure. And because that does factor into other stuff in the future, so.
Absolutely.
Okay, item 9, PW 2024-30, Rob Roy Drainage District, additional work.
They are coming to an end. They still have some work to do out there on the first initial clearing and grinding and mowing. But when we saw it, when everything was gone, there are many, many trees that are on the downslope side. I'm going to use the whiteboard if that's all right. On the downslope side of the drainage ditch. And if you draw the ditch here, when they actually created the ditch, they just piled the dirt right here. And then it kind of fades out in the various farm fields. What we're looking to do is nothing in this area. This would be no. We would not do that. We are looking on this area here, where to where it meets the farm fields. That way, I figured we can regain almost 19 acres of land. So we wouldn't be doing anything in the creek. We wouldn't be doing anything where the erosion could get down into the creek. We would only do it on the back slope. And I took Chris out for a ride there when we were coming back from our public works tours, just to show him, and if he has any input.
It was enlightening. It was enlightening to see. It's the first time I've seen it close up, other than just a couple trips along 47 and, you know, a couple of the other areas. So to actually get out there, walk it, and drive it. It's a lot of clearing that's been done, and I understand what they're talking about with the stumps. There are areas that are, you know, up to 80 feet wide that there's just stumps where it could be tilled. So my concerns that I had prior, when I you all know I voted against this. Seeing it, yes, we as a collective, but not us, the farmers can collect another 18, 19 acres
of tillable land.
Yep. So this is money that has to be spent. We entered an agreement that says it goes to the drainage district, and how they get spent is generally between between us and the district in terms of what they want to spend it on.
And this is what they asked for, to try to reclaim some of that land.
Yeah. So
the farmers asked?
The drainage district did. They've been hearing from the farmers.
Okay. I was going to ask you how that communication works.
Yep.
Right. And this is, personally, I still take issue with just this whole process. You know, we're taking COVID money, you know, through the Relief Act, channeling them through to benefit the farmers directly. You know, I get we're saying it's under the guise of the stormwater management. I read through a lot of the act and some of the rules that they have posted on those. I don't want to say it's a stretch that this is, you know, usable funds, but it does impact the stormwater and the floodplain management that is cited within the rules. So, I mean, clearing and fixing the ditch does fall into the floodplain management, I guess you could say, from what I've read. Now, does clearing the stumps out? Personally, I think it should be the farmers. I think this should all be on the farmers. But we have an agreement that was entered into, so take it for what it is.
A lot of these stumps you said are on the hillside?
On the downslope side, on the back side.
Do you foresee any other additional work?
Possibly. There, once we get this all done, there could be some more stabilization work. The only caveat is everything has to be done by December 31st of this year, or whatever is not spent goes back to Kendall County. Mm-hmm. So once we get this work completed, we'll take a look with the drainage district and see if they'd like to do anything else.
Well, does it go back to Kendall County, or does it have to be, does it go back to the feds?
I think they have to give it back. I think we return it to Kendall County.
Okay, so
yeah,
it is,
I think they go,
So it disappeared, basically.
Use it or lose it, is what I thought it was.
That's how I thought I remember when we voted on it. That is definitely the intent of writing. I have a hard time believing that the feds are just going to vacuum up the money at the end of 2024. They'll probably use the money's grace, I guess, but we definitely want to get it. So then, what happens if you do this, and then you said restoration of some short, and then you find out that you don't have enough to do that then?
We only do what we can, up to the $500,000, and we're done.
They'll have to reduce scope or propose some sort of rate increase, you know, through the court system. So.
Yeah, that's just sticking
in. They can tax. They can tax. They can levy a tax.
Okay.
But the judge is very strict on that. He was very adamant. That's why it's been.
Yeah, I remember the.
This is much easier to have funds handed to you as compared to going through the judge and getting that levy.
Yeah, I don't think they'd ever get a levy this large.
Rusty, any thoughts?
Can you just remind me why this is our project?
We actually entered, we said that we would facilitate this because the Drainage District just doesn't have the people nor the experience to facilitate $500,000 contracts.
Well, the city was intervening in the legal process for the Drainage District existing and, you know, levying what they were requesting. Mm-hmm. So one of the compromises as a result of the court hearings was, you know, the city would basically volunteer to manage and, you know, administer the work and the contracts as long as the Drainage Districts, you know, used the money and got the money from Kendall County.
Just seemed like a county issue.
At the end of the day, I hope that someday it is, or that it's fully turned over to the city. I mean, this is an example of a governmental entity that just doesn't need to exist. So.
That was revitalized in 2014.
Yep. Right. So, it's not that maybe we ought to put this one on a regular agenda.
Thank you.
Okay, old business. PW 2023-83, Highlands Ridge Subdivision Traffic Sign Analysis. Is this sign, or is this for?
Started with the
traffic sign analysis, the initial study.
Yeah, the initial study was performed last fall, presented last October to this committee, a number of discussion points. were had on not only the speed analysis, but also the sign analysis. The request at the time was to take a look at potential striping that may assist in slowing down the traffic within the Kylan subdivision. So we went ahead, looked at that, put together some documentation, and prepared a memo and put it in the packet. So there is an exhibit that depicts a potential option for basically reducing a lane width via striping and some of the advantages and disadvantages potentially of doing such such an improvement. So we're a little bit limited on locations on where this could potentially be. So really, we only found one location on High Ridge that it made sense, trying to avoid driveways and what have you, throughout the stretch of roadway. So it's almost in the middle, if you will, between Faxon and Blackberry Shore. And again, the consideration for doing such a thing is to potentially slow down traffic. There's some studies and an article that we attached in the memo that referenced a potential reduction from 1 to 7 miles an hour in certain cases. Seems to have less of an effect on low speed roads, which this is a low speed road. And again, from the speed analysis that was performed at the time, the average speed on High Ridge was 28, 29 miles an hour, if I remember correctly. And the 85th percentile was about 34 miles an hour. So posted speed, as everybody knows, is 30. So a couple different pieces of information in the packet, and just here to present it and answer any questions or have any discussion on the topic.
Guess I would let you guys go first with it, since it's your ward, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a solution that I think can help up here. Obviously, traffic signs are not the preferred or best way to go about calming traffic. So something like this here, we wanted to find something that was an interim or something we can start off with without spending a lot of money, see if we see changes and improvements. So striping is an easy way to do it. It's nice that there is a spot on High Ridge to see if this works. One thing that I would say maybe couples in with this, and it's a visual that's a vertical, is clustered street trees. So there's only one street tree in this section. I'd say if you were to do, supplement the one on the south side with two more trees and then do three on the north side, if the city would put those trees in, that would also help. Creates basically a tunnel vision of the streetscape. So it actually does help if you go vertical too. So the cost of $1,200 of trees, you add that on top of that, because I think what we're looking at, $3,000 for striping to do something like this.
Yes.
It would be nice if we could find something somewhere along Northland to help that one. I know it's just with the park that's over there, the S-curve, and then now with the proposed development, if that ultimately goes to sale, we're going to be adding quite a bit more. So that one, there's a lot of cut through traffic getting from North Bend's Whispering Meadows down to Target.
Be glad our subdivision is not what we built out.
True. So, but yeah, I think this is a good solution. At a minimal cost, honestly, I think this is something that is a good trial to see how it works.
So I have a couple questions on, I guess, the pros versus the cons. The effectiveness and the reduction of speed, is that overall, do we expect that in an area like this where you said it's about 28 miles per hour? Is that what you said?
That's the average of the speed from the fall.
Yes. So do we expect this to be in that 1 to 7 mile per hour range, or because it's a lower speed, do we see maybe 1 mile per hour? What I'm saying? I don't know if the state.
I would lean toward a lower end of reduction. Yes. Okay. So it does indicate some of the studies that, of course, it's more effective speed above 30 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Or speed limit. So yeah, the reduction is probably a mile an hour or two.
In this. Striping, it's just a visual.
It's just a visual, and right, no other physical construction would take place other than the installation of signs.
Okay.
So, you know, if it's something that, you know, if the city doesn't like, it can be painted over or removed relatively easy.
Right, because we're not, these are just the thermoplastic.
Correct.
Stripes.
Right.
You can feel them if you drive over them, but they're not like the rumbles like that rumbles. You put. You know, we're not grinding in the rumbles or,
right.
You know, heat setting those in. We're just putting striping on the surface.
Have we ever done anything like this before that you guys are aware of?
We have not.
No.
So we won't know how the plows handle it. I mean, so is it like a paint though? I mean,
it's thermoplastic. It's like you see at the stop bars. So it, the snow plows will eat it.
Oh, it will eat it, okay.
They didn't in about 4 years.
It's just like any of the other stripes that we
yep.
have to go back and do. So.
And we just we use paint after the second time around. We just don't use the thermoplast. We don't have a thermoplast machine.
Mm-hmm. Say we decide to do it. What's our plans for kind of measuring this? It's actually having the desired effect.
So timing wise, this area is planned to be paved. Later on this year, so we would install the striping after the roadway is resurfaced. You know, we would probably want to do another analysis, you know, sometime after the striping goes into effect.
And at public safety, they went through the traffic metering that they're doing, so the program that they're doing for traffic controls. Sam's got a really good project that he's working on for. You know, tracking data,
yep.
You know, the signs that BD uses, they're the, you know, small ones you can have turned on, or they're using the big trailer ones. I know EDI has the little boxes mm-hmm. that sneakily mount on the trees, but those will be used to collect data. So he was talking about how these are going to be going in. Even if the signs are turned off in terms of the visual, they're still collecting data. So this is one that he has on his list of a follow through to put those out there and check. See how the progression goes. So we had a nice conversation about that the other day.
So would the thought there be, if people see a vehicle or see a rate like a detector, they may slow down for that reason, at least for a while. And then, so how do you get the idea of, is this experiment gonna work on its own, like without having the other deterrents?
Well, the signs, when they're, putting that sign up there,
yeah.
You can either have it on where it shows your speed,
right.
Or it just sits there.
Okay, so
the public doesn't realize that it's still collecting data,
right?
When
which
it's not,
no,
I mean, sign. So you know, depending where it is, and then the ones that EI puts out there, have you even seen those? Just a little box
right.
mounted on a tree. People don't even see those.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yes.
If they see it, they will.
They're
going to slow down at least for a while.
They're going to do the other thing. They're going to try to break the high record.
Well, yeah, that happened to me over in Sunflower. So
you did that over in Sunflower?
No, but I had individuals that were literally seeing how fast they could go to trigger. So
now, this is kind of what I see as maybe a first step progression here. If it works, Aurora has taken this to the next step of actually building the curbs that go along with this, and you actually have a physical barrier that actually slows it down and throws down the road. They've been very successful with that, and they've got a lot of data on that one. So, if you want to see how it works with the physical barrier, Aurora is the place to go. They do have those in several locations.
Is it slippery?
No.
So in the winter, you know, when it gets icy or anything like that, or
no.
Rain?
No more than any other crosswalk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for an experiment, I don't see a reason to not try it. Oh,
can
okay,
I?
Sure.
Can I address
go ahead. Yes, you may.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sit back here, all quiet, thinking
yeah.
about
yeah.
my high score
by all means.
So I'm Rich Vineyard. I live at 2123 Northland Lane. I've been back and forth this topic between started with Chris and Marty Munns. And it's worked its way forward, so it's been quite a bit. The vast majority of the people on my streets are either one, elderly, or two, have a bunch of kids. When I first got there, Northland didn't connect to Blackberry Shore. It stopped short. The park wasn't there or anything like that. this was never an issue. Once it opened up to be the cut through, it became the issue. I know a vast majority of us with young kids, my kids play in the backyard. My kids don't ride bikes on the driveway. They don't do anything like that. When Chris brought up the fact of Montgomery has it where it narrows down, listen, we've been parking cars down Yellowstone and Northland Lane on both sides to get people to slow down since I've lived there. And it's still absolutely positively nuts. I myself have followed a car or two to see kind of where they're coming from. So I guess my question here is, we're looking at a whole bunch of different ways. The area's growing up. We're going to expand that. I mean, the city's eventually going to sell that lot. We've already got limited parking in some of that area. Plus, we got all these townhouses. The townhouses don't connect to Beecher yet. That's a lot of traffic that's going to and from these subdivisions to the shopping area. Personally, I would be contacting the owners of Home Depot or something like that and seeing if we can get something on the books where it's a trespassing, where people don't use it as a roadway. It doesn't cost any money. And I believe it would just take Home Depot to come and say, we don't want people cutting through. Again, I live right there, so I'm guilty as charged of it. But if that stops people screaming down my street at 40 miles an hour, and the worst part is with the cars on the street, you can't see kids if they're out there. And two, it's up to somebody to give way. So it's an issue. I understand High Ridge as well. You really only have houses exiting on the east side of that street, not so much on the west side. But again, it is completely wide open. So I would just throw something out there like, hey, before we start throwing tax dollars and stuff in there, maybe the easiest thing would be to say, hey, it's private property. Can we come up with some sort of agreement with Kendall Marketplace or Home Depot that says, hey, anybody that cuts back here gets in the way of our forklifts, gets in the way of our people unloading trucks, our truck turnarounds, the whole nine yards. Can that become a ticketable offense? Maybe that would probably be a smarter deterrent than striping. If we can just get people to realize that instead of taking this cut through at 40 miles an hour to go around the block, I think this problem fixes itself. Again, I've asked this, I think we've talked about it, I don't remember. I've talked about it with Joel and Chris, I've been through so many of them.
Yeah, we haven't yet, but we can certainly if you want.
Beautiful. You know, you guys had to speak the radar over Whispering Meadows too. Like, it doesn't stop there.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, being I followed a kid or two and had conversations with parents in my own subdivision, but being a yard snob that I am, you know what, I'm out in the yard a lot. I see a lot of people. I know a lot of people in the neighborhood. I know what their cars look like. When it's their kid, it's an easy phone call, but it's not always people within our subdivision. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I didn't know if that was ever a consideration. I understand private property, but I also understand that you guys can get into agreements with them to police it or go on that route. So just, it doesn't cost any money to have the conversation. And maybe we can spend it to fix other drainage ditches or roadways or buy new plow trucks or hire more cops, like stuff that we actually really should. But thank you for your time.
So you're talking about the cut through that goes between...
So Northland Lane, it cuts right behind the loading docks of Home Depot.
Yeah.
And then basically we can take you all the way back west.
Around the ponds. Like.
And like I said, I'm guilty as the minute Northland Lane opened up to Blackberry Shore. I mean, you used to not be able to go west from there, but I used it as well. But that was when I didn't have kids and see the issues. Now, my neighborhood has been watching a little bit of this. There's a couple people that are involved with stuff. And with the limiting of parking because of the actual baseball diamond, and then if you ever construct any homes down that vacant area that the city owns, I don't know exactly what the plans are there, but their survey markers are planning something. Until it gets to PZC, I don't see it. So it just seems like a common sense approach to this, guys. If I'm totally off base, like, let me know and I can live with it. But I don't think people on my street want to give up being able to park on both sides because people want to use it as a dragway to get to Target faster. I'm done now.
the slight bend on Northland there.
Yeah.
I think it's good and it's bad because it kind of forces you to consider it, but then again, it's kind of a blind spot, right? So yeah. Especially with the park right there.
And so. To be honest, the last police chief, the western lane, turning both north and south onto Northland, I mean, they would NASCAR cut these corners.
Yeah.
I mean, you would have people getting ready to enter the right of walk, and these cars would be coming right through. That same problem happens behind Home Depot with that blind corner.
Right.
You know, you throw one truck in there, and I know that's private property, but, you know, in the end of it, that when I hear the tires kind of holding on as they're going around that corner, for better terms, you know, it's probably a little too quick. And I know the hassle of lowering a speed limit is something you probably don't want to entertain. But, like I said, this just seems too common sense to not have a conversation with a private business and say, hey.
Yeah, we're close to dropping it down to 25, right? Home rule?
Yeah, we have a few home rule to do. Otherwise, you got to follow the state tells you what you got to do.
No, that's what I'm saying. I get it. It's asinine until you get your 25,000. But at this point, I know the game. Let's just use money better. Just wanted to throw my 2 cents out there. You guys make the decision. And
it's not related to this, but Rich did bring it up. So do we have an anticipation when Beecher will go through? Is there any potential estimate or ballpark on that? No.
Long term. Beecher won't happen until the property to the west connects.
Yeah.
Because Gillespie is the one that connects through the townhomes, but it's.
Yeah.
It'll be open soon. They have models in the townhome in that next section, so Gillespie will be open soon.
That's in the westbound lane of Blackberry Shore at the intersection of Northland. You'll see the car there to the left is coming through. Where their loading dock and the sneak through area. The other thing about that intersection is that curve on Blackberry Shore by the sledding hill wasn't too bad with people cutting through, but now with those townhouses there, like it's amazing how fast a car will come around that corner and they're on that intersection. So just one of those things like, man, I think this kills so many birds with one small stone, so.
We'll see, because adding another 100 units on the townhomes.
It's going to get worse. Sorry.
So, thoughts? I mean, this experiment probably doesn't hurt to try. It's
right.
Not that much money.
Now, we've got time. We don't have to make a decision now because we have to wait till after the pavement goes in. So when's the completion estimate?
Yeah, so this is part of the additional work.
Mm-hmm.
So we're targeting go out the bid in May. So it's because it's probably going to be in the fall. Let's say October-ish.
So this may not even be something this year.
So we could table it till.
Well, so the painting we're recommending to do.
Okay.
Within staff authority. So we're going to do that after it gets bid out.
Okay.
So that part of it, we were just making sure that everybody was generally okay with the concept of us embarking on a new service, you know, test pilot basically, to see if it works. So.
And then if we wanted to discuss with Home Depot and how does that work? How would that?
I don't even know. I would have to talk through legal and, you know, see what kind of enforcement stuff we have on there, you know, talk to.
Well, I imagine it would have to be a voluntary thing, right?
Well, yes.
Yeah, you're going to have to be able to go in there and
dictate it. But whether we even agree as, you know, professionals with traffic engineer, you know, knowledge, that would be an acceptable solution would be something we have to talk about. So that's internal dialogue.
Yeah, I just didn't know how that would even
external.
That dialogue starts even.
Yeah.
I know some of the Home Depot employees do get frustrated when they're using that back door.
Right. For sure. Yeah. Yep.
There are a lot of kids.
So you're saying they get upset about
people coming back
coming through there?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're trying to run a forklift with a load on it, and
okay.
They get cars coming back and forth. I've run into it. I use that area to get to Target or the other stores. I think everybody does. If the connection wasn't there, you wouldn't use it.
Can I add one thing?
Yeah.
So in the community that I work in, we have a lot of retail areas, and we deal with parking lot accidents, the whole nine yards, what can be enforced, what can't be enforced. What I will tell you on that side of it is over the last 5 years, I've noticed that our PD has reached agreements with a lot of retailers about actually policing their parking lots. I don't know if that has increases to do with some of the theft issues or anything like that, but 10 years ago, there was an accident in there, there was no tickets because it was private property.
Right.
Somewhere along the way, these public entities have decided to get into an agreement to have them have authority on their property. So there's a way to do it. I don't necessarily know how they did it, but they have been doing it.
Yeah, it's through mutual agreement.
And we're not home rule.
Yeah, I don't think that matters part of it. It's just whether the shopping center entity wants to do it.
Yeah, we did something with like Joel, I think, or something where
it's
we
fire
about,
lane.
It was about towing or something,
it's
right?
It's a fire lane.
Yep.
That's usually where it starts, is the agreement with the fire. So they can tow people that are parked in the fire lane.
Yeah, so I guess my suggestion is let us discuss it internally, and then we can report back at a future meeting.
Sounds good.
Everybody okay?
Yeah. And then the striping is going to go ahead and...
Yep.
Okay. Do we that go into consent?
Doesn't even need to be voted on. As long as you guys are generally okay with it, we'll do it.
Okay.
All right. You should put those on the plans, Brad.
Yeah, Ken, we'll include those on the plans.
Okay, great. Important
bid package.
Yeah. Okay, so then people will get to know about it, other aldermen that aren't here tonight. So. All right.
Anything else with that? Okay, additional business. I'm going to go first. I talked with Bart, and I didn't know if we wanted to have an icon in the agenda for, you know, Public Works. We all did the tour here recently, the majority of us. So I have a few items that, because you mentioned about, I told everybody at the Montgomery facility that this is the time if a person has a concern or, you know, or even a
watch list.
Yes. Yeah, or just a thought even to look at.
Absolutely.
So I'll go with my couple items I had on here. I know, I think Chris and Craig, we were with in Montgomery, we got to spend a lot more time with our architect. He was right with our group. So, and so I know he was aware of some of this stuff too. So, just a few items, and I don't know how the communication will work. If somebody here talks with Chris when he's designing stuff, or how this information gets shared,
you speak it, we'll take it from there.
Okay. So I know one item was heat piping in the floors that was brought up. It sounded like, and this is from the architect's side, he said that maybe in the shop areas it's possible to help, and that's good for the employees too, I think, because if they have to work on the floor or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then he did inform me that it's not even feasible to do it in the big area.
It's expensive.
Yeah. Well, he said that it would be cost prohibitive.
Correct.
To try to do it in there. Yep. So, because I think I even asked him that. Like, what would the quote be? And he goes, you don't want to try to do it in there. Plus, I guess the way the trucks, even though it's on the concrete, can still, it has to be done a certain way or it can still damage it.
Yeah, you have to do it correctly.
Force onto the...
Just so I'm clear, did Montgomery have heat piping in the floors?
No, I think...
Was that your idea or the architect's idea?
I think in the maintenance bay.
Okay.
Not the shops. Did they? I thought they, Mark
that was
said
a budget item they pulled.
They pulled
did
that.
They pulled that one out.
That's where he wanted it, was in the auto shop, but that was one of their budget items they pulled.
Do you remember if he said they put the tubing in or not? They didn't do any of it. Okay.
I can't remember. Are you suggesting that we should add it in, or are you just saying that's something to think about?
Can we double check that with him? Because I thought Mark said he had it, and that was the only space he did it, because that was the benefit, because they could feel the difference of the floor. It makes a huge difference for them when they're doing the work in that room.
I don't know how you go about, like I said, you know how you want to do the communication, so maybe...
Yeah, we'll check with
Montgomery. You figure that out and talk with Chris and...
Are you advocating for putting heat in the floors, or you're just saying that's something we should look at?
I think we should look at it, because I don't
know.
Let's
find out.
I'd like to know the cost.
That's something that could be done as an ad.
Okay.
alternate if we wanted to,
yep,
cost-wise.
Yeah,
but
that's kind of what I'm getting at.
To look at.
I have no specific agendas on the items I'm going to mention. So we talked about the mechanical bay lifts. The one at Montgomery had that one that sits down in.
Yep.
It sounds like, and even the architect, Chris, he thought that was maybe a better way. So I don't know any more details.
Elgin's or Montgomery's?
South Montgomery.
Had a post lift that would allow you to access the tires that was much more expensive. They were both about the same weight. And Montgomery had a,
yeah,
the rail lift.
But
you know, each of them has pros and cons. I would assume that we would have an internal discussion about what kind of a lift we would want prior to hiring an mechanic.
We actually talked to the fire department's mechanic about that.
Great.
So.
Yeah, because they were saying that they really liked the lift that they have with the two rails, because you can actually jack underneath that, and then the wheels are free. But then you actually have a work surface because the rail is right there.
They mentioned something about mowers too.
Yeah,
it
so
allow
they can,
them to.
They can line up their mowers horizontally across, and they can do multiple times,
six
times.
Yep. So that dual rail seemed to have a lot of pros to it compared to the center one, because then you're doing a balancing act. It's, you know, depending on what you're trying to access.
64,000 pounds, that would be.
Yeah.
The other one, I think, was 70. I think they were both in the same ballpark.
Yep.
Pretty close.
They will handle
all of on the list.
Okay. Well, I'm going to bring this one up, and I know this because I met with Mark once by myself before, because I didn't, you know, before we had this scheduled. They got to pull their fuel tanks out there. Montgomery does. And because of EPA, I think they got 2 years. So their new tanks are going to be stored above ground, and it's much cheaper. All right, we need to find that out then, because it sounded like the impression I got maybe that above ground storage tanks, because of all the EPA rules and stuff, it becomes a, and I know Fermilab does that. All our tanks are above ground. They don't, and actually they shut down the only fuel tanks we had, and it's the same thing. Now they contract that out. You go off site to get your fuel now for the laboratory. So hopefully,
I've asked Chris this question, our architect, and he said for the size that we're getting for the, I think it's 2,000 fuel and 2,000 gasoline, that the below ground tanks, the double wall or triple wall tanks, wherever they are now, are more cost effective than building all of the safety apparatus that are above ground.
Okay, so but are you saying that Montgomery installed it below ground and that the
No, they're using their old tanks.
Their old tanks.
They got it full up, so
I got you.
That's what he was telling me.
Yeah.
Then he said when they looked into the cost, because I guess the EPA now to put tanks underground, is that?
It's just they're higher standards now than there used to be. Yeah,
so
they're
much
double wall tanks.
Yeah. You got to have a vault and it's got to be lined and.
Yep.
Yeah. I didn't know any of this until
I
started asking.
Even with above ground.
Above ground, you have to have like your spill catch have to contain more than they actually hold. Then we're getting 4,000 gallons worth, so then it becomes kind of cost prohibitive. But yes, we looked at that as well, and we'll look at it again.
And,
yep.
And that's why I thought.
Yep.
We'll you just know, well, he's designing it from scratch. Chris, you know, is doing his thing. That would be the time that you look at that, per se, maybe. And,
you bet.
Yeah, because like I said, I don't know the numbers either way on that.
We'll double check for sure.
And the only other thing was, so how do you work it with your guys? Are you doing like meetings with them for the new facility, or?
So let me answer that.
Okay.
So there will be some sort of data gathering. So Parks has already provided their combined comments. Tim. I would assume that your guys are going to do the same thing.
They are doing it now, and I have Tim's as well, and I'm packaging them up.
Take that. I'll probably end up reviewing it as a group of managers with the architects, figure it out. My assumption, and this is without talking to the architects about how they usually do things, would be they're going to finish the drawing of, you know, the next level concept plan, walk us through it, and then it'll be presented to the guys, to you guys for feedback, you know, before we kind of embark on, like, making these decisions.
Okay.
So that would be where we're talking about above ground versus below ground tanks, you know, different variables, options, et cetera.
All right, yeah, because I know I took what you said, and I'm like, well, yeah, I don't want you to send him off and do a whole big design of a certain way and then say, you know what,
oh, our staff, some of our staff says this, or some of our staff, you know, correct, or this versus yep that. If he knows that ahead of time, it makes him more productive, like,
yeah,
at least in my mind.
For sure. Absolutely. I don't know if you had any other, you know, in PW internal processes that you were going to do.
No, I think, just like you had said, Mark, when we get that product, then we just kind of go over it and see what we have.
Yeah, and Tim's staff comments are mostly in the same direction. You know, there are differences of opinions on different things, you know, from time to time. You know, if there are choice, if one guy is like, I want this lift, and another, like, you know, that's something that we would have to talk about and make a recommendation. So
I had a discussion with Dan Chazier when we were there, and he goes, we have, what, 39 guys?
We'll yep be close, yep.
So he was like, do you really think, because he was kind of giving me crap about, do I really think that 39 guys are all going to agree on
that? Yeah. It's easier than designing services for 25,000 people. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like, so.
And we all know that nobody's going to be 100% happy, but I think in this case, from going from what we have now to that,
yeah,
everybody's going to be ecstatic.
Massive upgrade.
Yeah,
our current facilities, as we saw here, which was not a, you know, ground up new building with all the, you know, bells and whistles, you know, people love it. Once, you know, once it's concrete.
So that's the ones, items that I had, I knew off the top of my head, even pretty much when we finished there. Yeah, I think four of us, five of us were there.
Mm-hmm.
Want to add on to this? Or
there's, I've got a lot of thoughts on this one, because if you've seen the two facilities, obviously going up to South Elgin, there was a little bit older, but it was a very functional building. You know, you look at that building, how they laid it out, it's very utilitarian and it functioned for their needs. And then you go to Montgomery, brand new, very, very functional. There's a lot of things I like. There are things I picked up from both of them. And a few of the things that to talk through, work through, you know, the mezzanine within the building was great to see how that truly laid out the ability to move things up, you know, the high cube storage type of thing. Those are key things for me. I know I talked to Eric and others. Is there a way to use, you know, mezzanine, or, you know, break it out so that, you know, trailers or other smaller items, you know, you're putting a mower on a crate and you're putting it into the cubes and moving them up so that we're not having to have everything that's seasonal on a single flat layer, or trying to get it up to the mezzanine. The mezzanine would be great, you know, if it accommodates putting mowers and things up there and you can do it easily, but also if it's just going into a rack, kind of the way I equated it to is boat storage in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
They're all slide-in racks, you know, you go four high, five high, but it's all done with the forklift. So you're packaging things out in and out. It was good to see some of the equipment that's used maybe once or twice a year stored in these racks. So the ability to go vertical was huge for me to be able to use those spaces. I think the way that we have a very long building, Montgomery laid it out nicely to utilize those type of spaces. Obviously theirs is a double wide bay.
But shorter.
Shorter.
Yeah, so yeah, more square type.
So you got we'd have more just continuous length, which works because then you have two continuous walls, you know, one mezzanine, one that's able to, you know, if you're wide enough and set off, you can actually stack stuff against it. So,
cool. I had guys ask if we could put a mezzanine on both sides. That's how impressed they were with it.
Right, and that's kind of what I mean, is if you could do that, you know, they may not have to be the full depth of
right
the trucks.
I think it was more for like the record storage and that kind of thing, where you could just
yeah
build that in and be done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So those kind of things, maintenance, I did like the drive-through parallel to the building layout a lot better than the nose-in type of maintenance. It just seemed to have a better flow and feel to that there. Talking with some of the guys there and the public works director, they have theirs oriented east-west. It's heated but not air-conditioned, but in the summer they can open the doors and they can cross-ventilate that space, which is very thoughtful. Ours, we have to do some reconfiguring in order to try to accommodate that. I think there are some ways to do it, but just having the linear bay seems to make sense. as compared to every, you know, three phase nose in. So, and then if you're doing that, technically it's a fourth bay, just because it's linear as compared to three wide. So that's kind of where I'm leaning, is maybe reorienting some of those wash bay with the catwalk. That was a great thought in order to keep things cleaned out. They did mention, make sure that the drains in the floor are wide enough for the back truck to come through, so that you're not scraping with a 4-inch shovel to get that drain cleared out. I did not like the individual offices within the shops. Aside from the mechanic, it just seemed very compartmentalized, too much to have every department have an office space within. The counter workspaces.
Talking about the like physical office cubicles, or like you're talking about the workshops?
In the workshops. The ones the that workshops. Were parallel to the actual.
Montgomery had their foreman in their shops.
Okay. I wouldn't have an issue if, you know, you had that workspace, you know, the counter, couple seats, you know, paperwork kind of stuff, but having each foreman in those spaces, it was very much compartmentalized. I can imagine the cost on those, since you're doing glass and brick or masonry for each one of those walls, as compared to being in the administrative offices, a lot more costly.
Sure.
And it detaches them and separates them more than what I think you'd probably want to have. But obviously, yeah, maintenance, that seems to be a necessity, because that's where they're going to be all the time. Just those are a few thoughts I had initially. And then lots of lighting. Montgomery was bright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The transom type of lights all the way around. I don't think we need as much glass on some of those shops, but if you get the transoms, there's a lot of light that comes through those, which made that building bright. It was nice to see that, because that was the big difference of Elgin. They had lights at the ends, and then it was some lighting that they had to use.
Yep.
It was a long, narrow cave, so if we can manage that with high cube storage still, and then absolutely no skylights.
Agreed. No, we won't get skylights.
No penetration of that sort. But then I will say, conversely, one of the staff did mention for maintenance, is it possible to do elevator up through to the roof, you know, for maintenance, for things to go up and down. Montgomery said they actually keep a box up on the roof for general tools that are used on the roof. So maybe there's a storage cabinet up there for everyday tools that are needed instead of hauling things up and down. So I'm sure I'll have others, but.
Yeah, you just triggered something else that we've talked about. So Montgomery put the steel and everything in for the big crane, but then they, for budget reasons, they didn't actually put the crane, but they had it so you could add the crane later. I think he mentioned that they're thinking about doing it, right? Yeah. So is that something that?
We haven't even discussed that. I mean, that's something we can discuss with the architect, but my
you haven't had a thought about a crane? Well, they cut out the crane.
Right.
So that was like a design decision they did halfway through. So I don't think that Chris has gotten to the detail.
Not to the detail of that.
But I mean, have you mentioned that to him at all?
No, I mean, if we get the mechanics lips, I don't know why we would need to pick something that heavy.
And I asked him, what would it be that you can't do since you don't have that? And if you're lifting an engine, if you're pulling something, they had an issue with a plow that they actually had to use another tractor to, you know, do a lift, because it was a hydraulic brake. They couldn't get to it, so they were able to get it up there. But if they had the lift, they would have been able to work with that a little easier. The boxes to take them off the trucks.
Yeah, they have hook lift boxes and that kind of thing. They have a little different program than we do. We don't have any of the hook lift boxes.
Yes. So there's some things, but if
it's... The mechanics said that they would use the overhead crane when they were working on their hydraulic cylinders. One is a safety, but two, to hold the box up while they're working on the
cylinders. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of, is there a functional value to it? You know, is it cost effective to put in the framework and then hold off? It was under $200,000, I think.
For the crane?
What did he say, or was it 300?
I just remember him saying to put the steel in and they cut out that budget.
He had a number for that, but he said he could get that, but that's something.
Use our
How
crane.
Much is it to put that
use
in?
Use our crane all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So handy. Extremely handy.
And then I know we talked about it a little bit. Can the administrative offices, since we're housing two parts, you know, we're going to have the mezzanine, can we go vertical, do two floors on the administrative spaces, you know, to cut down on the floor, the footprint of that? Obviously, flat roof design is a lot more expensive. So if we can shrink that, you know, we're going vertical with panels as it is, instead of doing the front area as CMU block masonry of that sort, maybe it is a more.
Do you remember that conversation now that you mentioned it?
But I don't want it to be a dark cavernous box. I did like all the lighting in the front in Montgomery because of the glass that they used. But yeah, I'm just, the wider you go with footprint, the more expensive that typically gets due to foundations and just roofing.
Well, so the question that I had too, if you go to a more square design versus the longer rectangle type design, your square footage is the same, right? It's just,
yeah.
So you're...
Their site, Montgomery's site was smaller and more square, where ours is a longer linear.
So what's the advantages when you decide that?
It's just due to site constraints. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, Mark was saying
preferences.
Yeah.
You don't got to yell as loud to yell at somebody across the shop.
And keep in mind, it cuts down on doors when you're doing the linear. You know, Montgomery has four doors. We'd have two. So it's, you have cost savings. You know, you get the efficiency of just a straight shot through. You know, granted, you got to drive through the whole thing, but as they were saying, they've got to loop around if they're trying to get, you know, in and out from one side to the other.
Like I told my guys, I said, keep your thoughts up here for now until we see the product. I think that's going to be all the difference in the world. We can speculate on everything and get our ideas ready, but I think once we see it, then we can really dive into it.
Is there some point, though, where he's going to go do this, the architect's going to go do the work, this work stuff, and it's going to be harder to change it at that point?
Well, I think our first go-around is going to be when we bring all this up.
Detailed drawings is when it becomes more difficult.
Right.
And then after bidding becomes more difficult.
Right. Yeah. So we'll try to get all that out of the way long before that.
I mean, it happens. There are times you go
and then you have to
make changes, but most of the time you're finding those kind of flaws early on in the process so that you don't have major cost implications. You know, if the economy goes to crap and, you know, everything skyrockets, that's a whole different issue. But that's why there's checks through this. You know, we'll see a concept, we'll see preliminary.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a straight shot to construction documents.
Yeah, because I think for me, it's this was kind of decided, this place, so we didn't have to think about any of that.
Yep.
That are not that able, so now it's a new building. Go ahead, Craig.
You were teasing me there about grease traps. And I got to thinking about it. Oil separators.
Oh yeah. Well, we have to abide by all the rules.
That. Make it close to the door so you can pump it out.
Pump it out.
Not like Fox Metro's engineer and who decided to put it right smack in the middle of the shop. And,
yeah, no.
And the jet truck doesn't fit in
doesn't
it, so
fit.
We got to run.
No, it'll be right outside. Yep. No, we'll know.
Yeah.
You betcha. Thank you.
You'd think the entity that regulates the grease traps would know where to put one and not right smack in the middle of the shop.
You think.
That was a Deutschler design, so.
Imagine that.
So I made the comment about the east-west flow on the maintenance area. I know our site is linear north-south. There's potential to rotate the building. I know part of this was the issue of the soils in the northeast corner of the site. If we were to turn the building, it's doable, we're on those soils, we would just be looking at additional cost for foundations to be able to accommodate the poor soils. So, site considerations of, you know, can it happen, can it work? We have the space, and I mean, the site is big enough to do pretty much any configuration we wanted. So, it's just looking at, if we did that, how much more cost would we look at, you know, to help that with the maintenance. The other thing you can do is you can actually flip the maintenance from being on the east side. We could flip this entire configuration over. If you get it to the west side, you at least have more flow because you're closer to where that airflow is. Being on the east side of the building, you're not going to feel the
you know, westerly winds coming through very often. So, just a change in how that would flow.
Although on the flip side, in the spring and the summertime, it's nice to put those garage doors open and have that wind coming through.
Well, and that's it. That's the whole point, is can we work with the site? Even though we have poor soil in the corner, what's that cost? And I don't want to air condition any of this, and I want to make sure that, you know, the building is functional. That these guys, you know, you can either buy the big-ass fans for the ceilings, which Montgomery opted not to, or you can do the, you know, the large ground fans that you move around and then store when they're not in use. You can always do that, or you can try to do it naturally. So hopefully we can give that some consideration to use the natural airflow.
Rusty, well, if you guys come up with, I think,
yeah,
try to get these to Bart as much as you can, because so he can kind of communicate them to the architect. So I don't know how we'll see him until he has something finalized.
And then Salt Dome.
Mm-hmm.
The pointy round teepee.
Mm-hmm.
Or the linear, like the county?
Pointy round teepee.
We looked at the county, and I apologize, Eric, but I'm going to correct you. You were...
It was all way off, was
you
I?
You were way off on your number. For the
How much was it?
Three times.
It was more than three times.
Is it?
Yeah. The depth of their building was not even as wide.
Okay.
So. But we're talking about that in terms of access, how you maintain it. But you're comfortable and confident that the round is...
It's tried and true.
Okay.
I mean, it's been around.
They haven't had issues.
They had a good rip.
It's a rip, but that's what's expected after 10 years, right?
Yep, that absolutely is. But ours we shouldn't have to worry about for 30 years, and then it's a re-roof.
And then capacity, but...
Yeah, we're 3,000 to 4,000 tons, but we still have 1,000 tons storage there.
And... Do you foresee that always being the case, using that over here at the county too?
I don't know. I really couldn't say.
For
right now, I mean, leave it right there. We'll never have to move it.
Our intergovernmental agreement is
$250 a year now.
For how long? Yeah. 99 years from whenever we approved it.
Yeah, and all pay is $250 a year now for maintenance.
Yeah. It's probably to our advantage to keep that as a capacity overflow. So.
As long as that facility meets the needs of everything we're going to need and not have to run a truck back and forth.
No, with the 3,000 tons, I think the worst year we've had has been a little over 2,000 tons, so yeah. we can keep a whole year's worth.
Yeah, that was a problem for us, is every snow event.
Right now it's 600 tons.
Yeah, running and grabbing more.
And they have 7 days to deliver it, and they wait till the seventh day, because they're busy.
There's no other
question. One more thing. We discussed last time about Adam Street, getting that.
I am working with Jill Johnson from the Conservation Foundation. Okay. That is very steep. It's going to be decently hard to get something established on there that they're looking for, such as like typical flowers that you'd see. They probably won't make it. It's going to have to be something that's very hardy. Something like an ivy, even, maybe, that could creep along the ground and make it green.
Where's this at?
Adam Street. So if you come kind of like across Van Emmon, mm-hmm. you can kind of go upward.
Yeah.
Or you go downward. Yeah.
We're lower Adams of Van Emmon Street.
Yeah, because of the topo there.
So yeah, so that hill right there, the residents there were pretty unsightly. I mean, we cut a lot of trees down. There's just stumps and catches a lot of leaves and weeds, and looks pretty different.
It's about that steep.
It's steep, yeah. Yeah. We'll look at it after we talk.
It's steep.
Look at it, yeah. Any thoughts of how we could possibly get some of those stumps out of there at least?
The stumps should stay.
Okay.
That's what's holding that bank.
Okay.
Otherwise, that's what's holding
that. Next question.
So maybe we could, if they left them up, maybe we could shave them down, but we need to leave the actual stumps there. That's what's holding that. And I actually have to get with Brad and his team, because there's a small little blowout in retaining structure that's there to see how we can fix that. Okay. We may have to drive some piles.
Does that run out onto the street?
It's really strange. Kind of, it's like 8 foot tall here to nothing, and it's only about this wide. It just is almost straight up and down. It's very steep.
I remember kind of where it's at, so.
It's like right off of State Street.
Yeah, it used to be by Ward. Yeah.
Yep. But then it goes into more of a wooded area where it gets much longer, much larger. It's just with that point, I think, is what they're looking at, right, Craig?
Yeah.
So we are working on it.
Okay. He called me every week asking for a week.
And tell him we're way early. I mean, we're a month early. People are like, yeah. I need my grass fixed. I'm like, we can't plant grass yet.
Yeah.
Especially like tonight, 23 degrees.
Okay. Nothing else? Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.